Ending a session on risks and dangers with a Greek economist takes a certain mixture of irony and humor. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you, Richard.
My name is Yannis Varoufakis. I'm from the University of Athens and from the University of Texas at Austin. And I'm here to talk about the dangers and risks for the world economy and the United States, in particular from Europe. Now, the U.S. Treasury Department, a couple of weeks ago, issued a report to Congress, raising several eyebrows by, not in so many words, but effectively describing Germany as a perpetual net exporter of recession to the rest of the Eurozone, and as a result, turning the Eurozone into a perpetual net exporter of recession worldwide. I'm here to concur with the Treasury Department, but actually to say that, if anything, it has understated the nature and magnitude of the problem. The way that, after 2008, following our own kind of banking disaster in Europe, in Europe we feared very much the Japanization of the Eurozone, the lost decade of Japan afflicting Europe. It was far, far worse than that, of course, because not only did we end up with a zombified, fragmented banking sector, but we did that without the quantitative easing that Japan had, without the fiscal expansionary fiscal policy, without the integrated banking sector, and with the rather toxic principle, which I describe as perfectly separable debts, which is effectively setting up the domino before it starts unfolding. Recently, last week, the ECB, the European Central Bank, reduced interest rates belatedly in response to the news that we are in a kind of deflationary environment. Inflation in the Eurozone as a whole is 0.8%, which of course means that places like Spain, Italy, Greece are in the grips of debt deflation. More recently, I looked at some figures which are very disturbing. Loans to non-financial firms in the Eurozone as a whole are minus 3% in October. In Greece, they are minus 20%. In Italy, they are minus 11%, and in Spain, minus 15%. This is a catastrophic environment, which nevertheless, the great and the good in Europe are describing as stabilization and the beginning of a new phase and crisis over. Now, very briefly, the way that the Eurozone is moving, there are two possible scenarios, possibly a third one joining these two scenarios. The first scenario I call the Kosovization of two-thirds of Europe. And what I mean by this is, anyone who has been to Kosovo knows that if you put your credit card in an ATM machine, you get euros out, you go to a restaurant, you pay in euros. So it is effectively de facto in the Eurozone, whereas without being the euro in the Eurozone. The economy is stable, but stably comatose. The only serious export, except for some minerals that are controlled by foreign firms, are the young people who are exported to mainly Northern Europe. This is Greece has already been Kosovoized, so you'll excuse me that I'm not going to mention Greece. Greece is finished, to all intents and purposes. What I will do is I will concentrate on two case studies, Ireland and Italy, because they are the stronger cases with the Eurozone. Ireland, indeed, is being hailed as the country that is going to exit its bailout. If anything, it is the example of the German blueprint for recovery for the Eurozone. Ireland's exports are 108% of its GDP. Now, there can be no greater mercantilist beast than a country that has that kind of performance. And yet, despite its amazing exporting performance, we have 1,000 young people leaving Ireland every week. Overall, 16% of young people between 18 and 35 have left the country for Australia, Canada, United States, elsewhere. We have a situation where the deficit is 7.3. The budget deficit, and debt to GDP has risen to 123%. So if this powerhouse of mercantilist posture has not managed to de-Kosovize itself. What can you say about Portugal, let alone Greece? But Italy's also quite interesting because looking again at the figures, we have an economy that has been crushed by a political failure. The recession in Italy is totally artificial. It was imposed by Brussels. And we have the latest figures. Industrial production was down 4.5% last month. Orders 7% down. The debt to GDP ratio in the last 15 months has gone up by 15%. In the last 15 months, I shall repeat that, it has gone up by 15%. The result of the European Central Bank's attempt to stabilize the financial markets and the bond markets, successful attempt. Nevertheless, the result of that through the two programs, LTRO and OMT, was that the average maturity of Italian bonds, government bonds, has gone down by a year and a half, therefore raising the risks and the dangers of a refinancing crisis there. And yet, Italy has a primary surplus of almost 3%. It has a very high ratio of domestically owned debt. And it's got an almost balanced current account. So this is a country which is being squeezed, the most significant country of the most significant countries, the one in the Eurozone, the one that is being squeezed and crushed by artificial austerity, and the one that can get out tomorrow. That gives rise to the second scenario. Kosovization was one, breakup is the second one. And a breakup, if and when it happens, is going to happen along the fault lines of the Rhine and the Alps, creating a recessionary region, Deutschmark-based, east of the Rhine and north of the Alps, and a stagflationary region throughout the rest of the Eurozone. Summing up, we're not having a German Europe. We're having a Chinese Germany, which is creating a Eurozone that resembles the period of the Grapes of Wrath. We have a permafrost building up in the periphery. And the only rationale, and this is where I'm going to try to respond to our Germans' plea for politicizing this discussion, the only explanation of why Germany is doing this is that it is very jealously trying to retain its exorbitant bargaining power within the Council of Europe. There is no financial and no economic rationale for what is happening. Germany is paying for the crisis. Most commentators falsely argue that Germany is refusing to pay. Germany is paying. It is effectively, as we speak, funding the building up of new kleptocracies in the periphery on the basis of the bailout funds that the German taxpayer is not going to see back. And the German authorities know that. The result of squeezing almost two-thirds of the Eurozone's economy, including parts of Germany, into this austerity posture, which is effectively poisoning the debt dynamics, creating a humanitarian crisis and poisoning democracy. The result of all this is that we have a combination, a negative feedback effect between increasing degrees of authoritarianism, because the only way you can keep imposing these policies which are failing so obviously is by squeezing the authoritarianism's will further and further. And that leads to losses of democratic legitimacy. At the moment, we have a situation where the European Union is reporting that 64% of European Union citizens do not trust European Union institutions. Debt deflation is getting worse. And now we are having a permanent bankruptocracy in the whole of the Eurozone, especially in the periphery. Bankruptocracy being the regime where the greatest capacity to extract rents from the rest of the economy is afforded to the most bankrupt of banks. This, what I just described, is the greatest and most sinister incubator of the serpent's egg. And I'm not just referring to the Golden Dawn Nazi Party in Greece, but I'm referring to general tendencies and trends within Europe. the two scenarios, Kosovization and the breakup along the fault lines that I described, the Rhine and the Alps, will probably both materialize if we continue along the present path. And that will prove a present and clear danger, a threat to recovery prospects in the United States, to the development of emerging societies, I don't like talking about emerging markets, to the chances of promoting peace, security, and environmental policies globally. Now, so allow me to finish by asking a very simple question. What should the United States support? What policies should Washington recommend to Europe's great and good? Tim Geithner, who was mentioned before, tried to advise the European Central Bank and European finance ministers to go into QE, to monetize debts. This will never happen. There are political constraints why it won't happen, and constraints that have to do with failures of perception and the imagination. So I would not recommend monetization as one of the recommendations to Europe. I would not recommend that federal steps are advised. Europe is in the grip of centrifugal forces that are pushing our peoples apart. A federal plan now would simply fail politically. And I would not support a breakup of the Eurozone, even though its design has been catastrophic and a lesson for the next 100 years of how not to manage integration of different economies. What I would recommend is that we should very simply redeploy existing European Union institutions like the European Investment Bank, the European Central Bank, the European Stability Mechanism, which we have created recently, the European Investment Fund, in a manner that simulates the automatic stabilizers that a federated economy has. Jamie Galbraith, myself, and another colleague, Stuart Holland, have put together a plan. We called it a modest proposal. This is another reference to Ireland. And I won't bother you further with this, but the very simple idea here is you have four or five existing institutions in the Eurozone which could be coordinated and redeployed in a manner that homogenize, Europeanize, as I put it, the banking sector, a proportion of public debt, aggregate investment, and uses the accounting surpluses that are slashing around within the European system of central banks in order to fund a food stamps program, in order to put into effect an EU-wide, Eurozone, minimum safety net that will actually restore a little bit of hope, a modicum of prosperity amongst the people in Europe who were never responsible for the debacle and who are now carrying on their shoulders, on their very weakened shoulders, the greatest burden. Thank you.
I'm willing to take like one or two questions, although I'm keenly aware that we're running behind schedule. So if there are already questions, I'd like them to be succinct and respond.
Over here.
Yes, Pekrovsky again. We heard previously that the U.S. was saved by FDIC not agreeing to Basel II regulations. So would not it be helpful for Europe to get rid of the Basel II regulation, which basically is the most incredible inequality driving machine, because it requires banks to have little capital for what is considered absolutely safe, and a lot of capital, what is considered as risky, which makes the banks actually financing the future, and not financing the future, and only refinancing the past. Thanks.
Bill, you want to take that? Oh, he's gone. Sorry, Gavin, you want to take that one? I need the rest of you.
If you're simply talking about Europe, I think that we have another priority at the moment. And the priority we have is to affect the banking union, which is now being proclaimed in name in order to be denied in substance. Without that, we are going to see this very cozy relationship between corrupt politicians and corrupt bankers eating into the flesh of the European Union.
One quick since you, I believe, asked the question about the reserve currency, I think the previous speaker pretty much put an end to the idea that the euro is going to replace the dollar as a reserve currency. One more. Over here.
Sorry that Mr. Black is gone, but somebody else, please. There's one agency in the 24 that has never done an audit of its books and still doesn't. What kind of problems and corruptions does this lead to, not the least of which is it violates the constitutional, U.S. constitutional provisions that there will be regular audits and accounting of expenditure? It's the Defense Department, in case you're not sure which of the 24.
I think that was part of the earlier panel.